Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, Travis Johnson, Nonprofit Architect, here today helping you build stronger nonprofits. I'm here today with Paul Pavolny, the Brand Mentor. You can check him out at VOPPA.com, V-O-P-P-A.com. Paul, how are you doing today?
Doing fantastic, man. How are you doing?
You know what? I am doing mighty fine. I'm just glad that we have good internet and we're video streaming and we're talking to each other across the oceans and we can make this thing happen in my spare time, if that's such a real thing. How about you tell the audience what you do as a brand mentor?
Well, as a brand mentor, I help people with their brands. I help them to get clarity. I help them to get creativity and attract the audience they're trying to reach and become the go-to leader in their industry. And so I help brands, you know, through this getting unstuck with the things that keeps them stuck. And I help them move forward in a very strategic way.
That's good, and that is important. I know if you're listening to this, chances are you are in some kind of startup nonprofit space. It means you are from idea through 5 years of operation. You're trying to figure out exactly what you're doing. You're trying to build a board. You're trying to get fundraising going. You're trying to build some kind of program or offering. And through all of that stuff, you're trying to nail down your message and get your message consistent across all your platforms, getting your brand, getting a solid logo, something that fits your style and your creativity and what you're actually trying to promote, and getting it the same across all your platforms, all your branding, all your same pictures, same logo, making sure it fits your website space, making sure all of that makes sense. And then hoping that you haven't put a lot of money into it before you find out that that Twitter handle you're hoping to get has already been taken by somebody else. Paul is definitely one of the gurus when it comes to brand strategy, brand identity, and brand delivery. What say you, Paul?
Well, I think, you know, I think for a lot of startups, nonprofits, whatever kind of startups, you know, when you're fresh, when you're new, when you've got a big idea, a lot of times you're super excited. You want to get it out there. Your budget's not there. So you kind of make do, you kind of throw stuff together. You get out there. You're not sure if what you're offering, there's actually a market for it. If there's a need for it, maybe you're not attracting the kind of audience that you want to get. And so you're kind of hustling and you're working and you're working, working, working. And sometimes you forget to kind of stop and look at, am I doing graffiti on a moving train? You know, am I busy doing stuff, but there's no productivity, there's no value, there's no nothing really working. I'm just kind of busy without actually being strategic. And so, you know, what happens a lot of times is I come back to a client, you know, with those kind of issues, and they reach out to me, and I come back to them and say, well, you probably have to start almost from scratch and look at your brand DNA and look at some of those core essentials that are important for your brand that, you know, might be as simple as unifying everything, or it might be as complex as your name, and looking at your name and your name's not making sense. It's not relevant to what you're trying to do. And so, you know, it comes from just stepping back, taking a pause and saying, okay, are we busy in the right direction, or do we actually need to stop, kind of regroup, rethink, do an audit, do an honest audit, and an audit with somebody from the outside, and have them come in with fresh eyes and look at what we're doing and say, okay, the reason we're stuck is because we're doing these things that should be going well for us, but they're not because we're doing them the wrong way.
That's huge. I know when I talk to startups, which is basically what I do every single day of the week, I'm talking to startups and people with these big hearts and big ideas. One of the things that I find interesting and sometimes frustrating is you meet someone and they have this idea And then they tell you the name of what they're doing. And I know there's more than one school of thought on this. I'm of the school of thought, and I've been wrong before, is that I want a name that makes sense for what it is you're trying to do without any questions. So the name, the Nonprofit Architect, if that's not clear, I have the subtitle of Helping You Build a Stronger Nonprofit. Rolls right off the tongue and it makes sense. There's some people out there that have this new brand and this new idea, and every time they talk about it, they have to then go and explain what the heck their name means. And I've been in the space for a while, and if someone has to ask the question and they don't get the immediate response or the immediate comeback, they're off on the next thing and they're no longer looking at you, and they could care less if you ever come explain it to them. Has that been your experience?
Yeah. Do you know what? The naming of a business can get very complicated. Because what does Google mean? What does Yahoo mean? What does Zappos mean? You know, what does Amazon mean in the context of selling products? And so, you know, if you're going to do something like that, you've got to find a way to stand out from everybody else. And there's going to be times of explanation. Now, if, you know, the best name is an easy name, of course, you know, if you can have something that's straightforward from the get-go, you know, this is Bob's Plumbing, you know, or Bill's Pest Control. Absolutely. You don't want to be vague in those cases. You want to around a problem that you solve. You know, this is, you have a pest problem, you want to call Bob's Pest Control, you know. But there are some industries that, having a different kind of a name is actually a good thing. It creates a curiosity. It also helps with getting a URL. You know, we're kind of in this era of, can you get the .com? You know, if you can't get the .com, then you have to make up some stupid word to try and get the .com. But, you know, and so there's kind of a mixed thing. You know, you can name a business after a founder, you can name it around a problem, you could name it around a solution, you can name it around a specific demographic. So there's a lot of possibilities when it comes to naming, that you've got to choose the right route for what you're doing. And so in some cases, you know, straightforward, uncomplicated, unvague is the absolute best strategy to take. And in other circumstances, something unique and fun and off the wall might actually be the better solution. And so it really, it takes having a solid strategy and a solid mission behind it and a solid purpose behind it that kind of defines what the best route to take is.
Now, if you do have a crazy name, and as Paul said, that works in some situations, you've got to be able to give some kind of story behind it. Right. I interviewed Matt Kubler, great man, absolutely love his story. His podcast that he hosts, among the many things that he does, is Two Dates and a Dash. And Two Dates and a Dash isn't self-explanatory, but it is intriguing. And when you ask someone, you see something like Two Dates and a Dash, you almost have to ask a question. What on earth does that mean? Well, what that does mean specifically is the two dates are on a tombstone, or the beginning and the end, but that dash, that tiny little thing between the dates, is where all the memories are, is where the life that you lived is, that tiny little dash. And that feeds into a story and helps to build your brand and that intrigue. And I find that very interesting.
Right. Well, and with the name of my business, Vapa, that makes zero sense, but I'm easily able to get all the handles on social media for it because it's a made up word, but it has a very unique origin story to it. If you have time, I could share it. But, when I went to an all boys high school in Australia, and there we call each other by our last names. You know, it wasn't like, hey, John, hey, Paul, hey, Bill. It was like, hey, Jones, hey, you know, whatever. And, with a name like Pavolny, you know, they couldn't really say it. It wasn't, you know, it was kind of like the whole, hey, Pava, and so they simplified it to Pava. And so they called me Pava for the longest time. And one time at recess, we were just saying our names backwards because we were bored, you know, and we didn't have phones to play with. And mine was Imbavop, and they liked the sound of Vop, And so, you know, I became VOP, and that migrated to VOPA, and that became my nickname throughout high school. And there's a lot of people that don't even know my real name. They just know me as VOPA. And so that kind of followed me pretty much throughout high school, even into college. Everywhere I went, you know, in even social gatherings, you know, in church, whatever, people would call me VOPA. That was just the name they knew me by. So when it came time to name a business, I had all kinds of ideas of what to possibly call it. But finally, I settled on just VOPA. And so I was able to get VOPA.com, you know, all my social handles, you know, and everything is VOPA. And so if somebody wants to find me, they just need to know VOPA and they'll find me. And so, yeah, I think in those cases, having a fun story behind it makes it interesting, makes it intriguing, and it gives you something to talk about. You know, same with, you know, my podcast that I'm hoping to release in the next couple of weeks called Head Smack. That came out of, I developed a creative thinking workshop that helps people think creatively, even if they're not creative. And so Head Smack is the idea of, oh man, that's so obvious, you know, like the smack in their head in realization that the solution to their problem, you know, sometimes is not as complex as they thought, but also it's kind of a framework for thinking creatively. And so with my podcast, I called it Head Smack, ideas that work. And so, but once again, it's one of those words that really doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it's a unique word that generates interest and generates curiosity as to what it's about.
See, I don't understand what the big deal is. I nailed Pavolny the first time without any prompting. It was the second and third time that tripped me up, but
yeah, exactly.
So before the podcast started, we were talking about a four-letter acronym called FAIL. And you use this to help guide people through the process of branding. Can you dive deep into that for us?
Yeah, I can dive deep into it. I actually, you know, do kind of a workshop on it. I've spoken about it several times. So, you know, going through the full thing would take a while. But just the summary of FAIL is you know, a lot of businesses, when they're looking at what they're doing with their brand strategy, they need to look at, you know, the four things in FAIL is, the first thing is fractured. Is the brand fractured? And by fractured, I mean, is it confusing? You know, is it inconsistent? Is the messaging unclear? You know, are you saying one thing one place and a different thing in a different place? Are you using purple in one place and green in another place and orange in another place? What about your fonts? What about the way you communicate with people, the experience with your website, the experience with your app, the experience in your store? And so there's a lot of areas within your brand and touch points of reaching your ideal audience that could be fractured. It's inconsistent. And because of its inconsistency, it's hurting your brand. It's really, you're not building equity in your brand. You're not developing a consistency that people can rely on. Whether, you know, if you're a restaurant, you know, one time that you create a wonderful hamburger and somebody's like, oh man, that was the best burger I ever had. And then they go back the next week and you've swapped out the burger recipe for something different. And they're like, I'm never coming back. I don't know that I could come back here and get the same experience every time. And so fractured the first part of FAIL. It's really important for a brand to look at areas in their brand where they're inconsistent, where they're fractured, where they're confusing, where the messaging is unclear, where you know, people are not having the same experience with your brand as they hope to have, and you're not getting that equity that comes from that. The second thing would be, is an amateur. You know, we had talked about the idea that, you know, a lot of times when you start a business, you don't have the resources. And so you go to cheap solutions. You know, you know, if you're a storefront, you do things cheaply. If you're a online business, you do things cheaply or quickly or yourself sometimes. And so as you scale your business, you know, it's looks amateur compared to other people in at that level that you're trying to be. Or that you're at. And so you need to look at your business and say, okay, it might have worked well in our early startup phase when we're kind of scrappy and just trying to get stuff done as quickly as we could. But man, it really looks amateur now. You know, we've really got to work on that and fix it. And this, I mean, it happens with every business. If you look at the big players that are out there, you look at Google. I mean, the changes in their logo from when they first came out with their logo and they used bevels and, you know, and drop shadows and, you know, all these crazy effects, and that was their standard logo. And they realized, man, you know, it kind of looks amateur now because everybody's moved away from those cheap Photoshop one-click bevels. And so, you know, they've evolved. You know, even Apple evolved their logo. Every business you look at, really, are they the same look and feel as they were when they started up? And so look at your brand. Is it amateur? Is your the way people answer phones, is it amateur? It's like, hey, you know, if somebody calls them up. And so, you know, what's that like when people call your business? Is it amateur? When you greet them at your front desk, is it amateur? I mean, there's so many different ways that a business, it could be very limited because it's amateur in some area. So it needs to scale up and get a little more together and professional in what it's doing. You know, the other thing is it irrelevant? You know, you could be a place that, you know, I lived in St. Louis for a while and we had the St. Louis Bread Company. Well, they became Panera Bread, right? And so they had to change up from being just simply St. Louis Bread Company to being Panera Bread. At least that's what I understand of their brand. But sometimes your brand is no longer relevant for just being a storefront. Maybe it's no longer relevant for visually. You know, you use the cool hipster vibe and, you know, hipster died and you're still doing hipster stuff. And so it's quickly, you know, you start aging quickly. You know, you do the trendy thing. You do the thing that's really cool for that time and that moment. And now you're kind of looking irrelevant. Language, you know, sometimes your language becomes irrelevant. You know, when it comes to talking about your products and services and what you do and who you're trying to reach, you know, you might have been using language in the past and it's no longer working.
Well, you see this and you see like AT&T, if you dial it back a few years, it was American Telephone and Telegraph, right?
Right.
Telegraph is not going to be a word that resonates with anyone. KFC used to be Kentucky Fried Chicken. It is now just simply KFC. GE used to be, right, General Electric. You have all of these things where at one point it meant to be a certain way and now it's changed. The Dodge Brothers car company is now just Dodge.
Right.
Apparently, right, Getting rid of words is the way to go.
Right. And so you need to look at, okay, were we once relevant in the visuals, in the way we communicated, the way we talked, you know, the language we used. Sometimes we can think we're solving a customer's problem in the way we talk about it, and it's not relevant to them. They're not at that place anymore, you know, and so they moved on or they changed or whatever. And so you've got to look at, you know, is the brand still relevant? Is what we're doing, how we're communicating, the things that we're saying, the things that we're doing, is it still relevant to where we are and where our potential audience is? And then the final thing is limited. You know, as you had mentioned, you know, the AT&Ts and the GEs and all of those, you know, and Apple itself. I mean, a perfect example of a limitation that was taken away was, you know, Apple for the longest time was Apple Computers. And it's been a long time since they've been called Apple Computer. They've taken off the computer part because a lot of their revenue is generated from mobile. And so they're no longer known as Apple Computer. They're just simply Apple. And so you have to look at, you know, the things that the name that I have, the presence that I have, you know, if I'm just on Instagram, but most of my audience is on Facebook, am I limiting myself simply because I'm not on all the channels I need to be? Am I limiting myself because of my name? Am I limiting myself because of I've just focused on my town and I could be actually regional or national or international? And so you've got to look at what kind of limitations does your brand currently have in a lot of different areas, and that could be holding you back. That could be holding you back from being the company that you need to be simply because you're not looking at fracture, you're not looking at things being amateur, irrelevant, or limited.
When I look at something like amateur, And we're jumping back a couple of letters. One of the things I talk about with startups is, hey, you want to go to your personal page. Your photo is not a photo of your face. Or if it is a photo of your face, it's not very professional looking. And I don't see a link to your nonprofit, either your Facebook group, your Facebook business page, or your actual URL. So why not? And they're like, well, you know, it's my personal stuff and this and that. I was like, let me ask you this. Do you think when a donor, you introduce yourself to a donor and they find you on social media, don't you want them to find a link to donate to your page? I guess that sounds like a good idea. I was like, so if you were a donor in this day and age where everything loads instantly once you click on it, you want to add steps and add layers of frustration between them finding you and then donating to your cause? Well, no, I don't want that. That's absolutely what I don't want. I was like, well, then my advice to you is we'll walk through your profile a little bit and find some ways where we could not revolutionize, but tweak things that are on your page to help direct them to where you want to go, give them their most desired outcome. Like if someone comes to my page, I want them to definitely do this. Something as simple as changing that 9 featured photos on Facebook. If you only post one photo in there, it takes up all 9 blocks. And when you're scrolling through social media, especially on your phone, that one giant block just jumps out at you. And then when you load that, you can also, on the description, put a link directly to where you want them to go. So if you go to my page and you click on my big photo, I asked, how are you having problems with your nonprofit? Check out my podcast. Looking for a community to grow with? Check out my group. So anyone that clicks on my big picture of my logo, immediately on there, it gives them something that I want them to do. Primarily, I'm looking for clicks and downloads, and that's my first option. If they're looking to actually contact me, connect with me, and ask questions of other people that are in their same area, other startup nonprofits that are trying to figure out, how do I bring a board together? How do I train a board? How do I get rid of a board member when we've outgrown them or they're just not producing? How do I find and connect volunteers? How do I have volunteer appreciation? How do I actually raise the money I need to get my mission done? And all that goes back to when someone clicks on your Facebook profile, especially if you're a startup, especially if you're a nonprofit and you want people to give you money, think to yourself, would you give you money if that's the profile you clicked on?
Right. Well, and that's the thing with today's culture is as soon as they hear your name, if it sparks any interest at all, they're gonna check you out. You know, they're gonna do a background check on you. They're gonna stalk you, and it's as simple as a Google search, and they'll see all your entities, all the places that you're at, especially if you're got a very unique niche and you're up in on the first page of the results. But still, they're going to check you out somehow. And if they go to your webpage, they'll probably, if you've done it right, they'll have links to all your social channels, but they'll check you out. And when they check you out, if you look amateur, they'll question how good you are at managing their money, how good you are at doing what you're doing. If you don't present yourself as, okay, we know what we're doing, you can trust us. You can trust that we're gonna do what we say we're gonna do. And so I think it is very important to look at how people react and how people see and how they perceive your business. And if it's amateur, it's going to have an effect. And you might never know it. You might not even realize that you are limiting the amount of potential engagement you could have simply because you haven't looked at your brand honestly and seen that you're amateur.
Well, there's some things that, you know, in any business and any nonprofit, any venture that you start, there's blind spots that you're going to have that you're just not going to know about. I've got a team that helps me with the editing and putting the podcast out there. And I love it when my wife gets involved in some of this stuff. She's not interested in business. She's not interested in nonprofits. She will definitely help people out. That's her nature. But she just supports me, right? She just knows that she wants to support me in the things that I do because we're a team like that. So she's listening right to the podcast and she's like, I go to your site and I'm playing on my phone and the screen shuts off and the screen turns back on. And, you know, I have to go back and I got to start the whole podcast over. How do I solve that? I was like, oh, well, if you download Spotify as one of the many podcatchers I'm on, you can start, stop, fast forward, go back, and all this stuff. And then when the screen shuts off, it's still playing. She loved it. She's like, that's great. So she's on Spotify for the first time. And she goes, and she's like, hey, on these links in here on your little show notes, it says, if you want to support me, click here. But there's no hyperlink. Right? Wow. Because Spotify doesn't allow hyperlinks in their show notes, which I think is easier bandwidth, easier processing or something for them. But I didn't know that. I'm not a normally on Spotify kind of guy. And she showed me that. I went there, and sure enough, you know, I don't assume she's lying to me, but I want to see it for myself. And I talked to my team, and they're like, oh, yeah, it doesn't show notes on there. I was like, all right, team. So why did we post this thing directly on there, knowing that it couldn't post links? And they, for whatever reason, weren't thinking about it, weren't engaged, or did it quickly, or whatever the reason is. You know, we all make mistakes. I'm sure I make mistakes all the time. Sometimes people tell me, and sometimes people just let me go ahead and make the mistakes and just move on with their lives. Yeah. But a little bit of feedback, and I was able to find something that wasn't quite right with my stuff. Talk to my team, and we got it figured out. We've got a new plan moving forward, and we got all our stuff updated, and everything's magical now. But there's a chance that someone came to my stuff, and they're like, Spotify is my gig. Go to Spotify. They listen to my show. Like, oh, someone said something awesome. I want to check them out. They're going to load the show notes, and the link I told them was there is not there.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, I'm looking amateur, and my stuff is fractured and broken, and you get all the letters, you know, as it to fail, and I probably lost them as a listener or a contributor or some kind of support.
Right. Because people want things to work. And when it doesn't, sometimes they don't give you a second chance. They just move on. They'll just keep clicking. And having fresh eyes look at something is so, so important. A lot of the consulting that I do with brands, sometimes what I'm revealing to them and what I'm showing them is not necessarily something that they're not qualified to do. It's just that they're so close to it. And so they miss sometimes the obvious. Now, you know, there are other times that, you know, because of my experience, I can give a different perspective. But sometimes it's those aha moments that they get simply because somebody fresh came and pointed something out and asked the right questions. It gets revealed. And so, you know, being too close to something can make you miss the obvious. I had one client where I had designed a van wrap for them. And I designed it, gave them several different versions. They chose a version that they liked. We went through several revisions of that version. We sent it to the printing company that would print the wrap. Then they wrapped it on the van. And once it got on the van, we looked at it and realized there's a typo in the tagline of the organization.
Ouch.
Like it was on the van. The customer sent me a photograph and he's like, dude, we misspelled like one of the key words, one of their mission statement, tagline, core words that was so critical to their brand. It was misspelled. We had all looked at it because we were so close to it and we all missed it. And so that's one of those cases where if it was simply shown to somebody that wasn't intimate with it, they probably would have spotted the mistake. And so, you know, that's where I think sometimes, you know, brands, when we talk about the fracture or being amateur or irrelevant or limited, is you can get so close to something that you miss the obvious flaws and things that can hurt you in the long run, just simply because you've just been too close too long and you miss the obvious.
Well, something else you run into is, I'm sure there's some kind of official name for it, but I kind of call it the professor-student paradox. You've got the students that go to college, and you've got this world-class professor. But the professor has this endless knowledge on whatever topic, and they're up at the top of the mountain. You've got the students wanting to come in and learn, but you've got the professional that's got all this stuff, and he can't use the right words. He can't reach his arm far enough down the mountain to pull the students up. He gets lost in the technobabble or some concept that he has mastered forever, but he cannot explain it to the novice. He can't explain it to the person he's trying to learn or person that's trying to help. And I see this in nonprofits where you have some kind of technical area. Sometimes it's with doctors that I've seen, mostly medical doctors, and they were trying to connect to their audience. but the words they're using, they're missing the point. You see, if I was an electrician and I'm trying to explain how a circuit works to a group of people, and I can use all the terminology that I'm familiar with as an electrician, and I can use volts, amps, and ohms and work through this from, I might reach five people in a room. But if I explain the same concept and I talk about resistance and water flow through a garden hose and how kinking that changes the resistance, now I can then explain it to everyone in the room with a simple concept. They can learn the terminology later, but if I haven't met them where they are to use the words that impact them and make them move, then I've missed them completely.
Right. Well, I think that there's a quote attributed to Albert Einstein. I don't know whether it's truly him, but the quote and the principle is true, that if you can't explain a thought or an idea simply, you don't know it well enough. And so I think that's where the idea of irrelevancy comes in, is, you know, you're talking at a high level and you're irrelevant to the people you're talking to, because you're using corpse speak, you're preaching to the choir, you're using language that's insider language that your customer doesn't understand. And you think you're impressing them through the words you use, but you're actually confusing them. And, you know, somebody once said, confused people don't buy. And so, you know, if you're confusing them, you're missing on opportunities to reach them and to actually have that dialogue with them about the thing that you're doing, the problem you're trying to solve, or the offer you're trying to make, because you're confusing them, and they'll just move on. They'll just click on something less confusing.
They'll say something like, "You're right," which is the quickest way to get someone to stop talking, and you'll stop trying to make your point because they said that you're right, and they'll move on and they'll forget everything about it.
Right. Absolutely.
We talked a little bit about irrelevancy. I kind of want to talk about rebranding. We kind of talked about these brands merging and evolving. And there's definitely two problems I see. You see where you're growing and evolving, but there's also this thing called mission creep on the other side, where you're helping veterans with PTSD, but then you're trying to do a gun shoot, and you're trying to do a silky psych, and you're trying to do a rucksack march, and you're trying to do this, and you're trying to do that. And before you know it, you've left core of what your organization, your brand is all about. How can you tell the difference whether you're evolving or where you're suffering from mission creep?
Well, because one, evolution is a progressive step-by-step iteration. Whereas mission creep is more of you're adding stuff to what you're doing. And so evolution, every brand evolves. Now there are times, whenever I talk to brands, I always talk about, you know, are you looking for an evolution or a revolution? You know, an evolution is simply, you know, we're just going to evolve where we're at. We're going to use the same DNA that where we're at as a brand, but we're going to just evolve it. We're going to upgrade it. We're going to make it better. We're going to make it more professional. We've been amateur. We're going to be professional. We've been fractured. We're going to get clarity, and we're going to unify. You know, we've been limited. We're going to adapt to what we need and make sure that we're doing things the way we need to do it. You know, we became irrelevant, and now we're going to understand our customers so clearly that we can speak their language and communicate with them in the way we need to. And so, you know, those are evolutions. Those are realizing where you're at and saying, okay, let's just kind of work with the DNA, but let's do better. Whereas a revolution you know, is more of a, do you know what? We are messed up. You know, we have got to absolutely stop what we're doing and reset and do something radically different than what we've been doing. Mission creep, you know, as you've described it, would be you keep adding stuff to what you're doing, and you're getting confusing to your audience with them not understanding, okay, do I go to you for this, or do I go to you for that? You know, do I go to you for this thing that you started doing, but now you're kind of not doing that? You're doing this. So are you doing now five things average, or are you doing one thing well? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's kind of what people start feeling is, you know, they want to go for to a specialist when they have a special need that only they can solve. And when you're all over the place, and you know, some people they almost go out of category. It's not even like they're just adding features. They're like, you know, I make cupcakes and I also fix tires, you know, and it's like, wait, what? You know, so you've got to be very strategic where that growth is happening. And is it happening wisely that makes sense? You know, Amazon was, you know, mostly about books, you know, initially that's what they started off as, if I understand their history right. And then they kind of added products to that as they evolved, but it wasn't a radical, hey, we sell books. Do you know what? Now you can come to us for your, you know, essential oils. And that's, you know, that's what we do now.
Yeah. They really wanted to change and revolutionize the way that books were delivered. I forget the real story, but Jeff Bezos couldn't find a book, or it was out of print, or there wasn't a way to get him the book that he so desired. So he created a way to get that book. And through refining and honing the process of delivering those books and getting those books delivered, it developed into a product delivery. It made so much sense to use that process to deliver other products and then expand into digital products that have made all the sense in the world. As far as brands go, you have these things like Unilever came out, and they were a soap brand and different stuff, and they weren't really that popular or that exciting as far as I remember. But when they rebranded, or they did doing business as Axe, and they really started marketing to men, it changed and revolutionized the way that they actually did business. And I think their profits were off the scale, but that doesn't just happen. You have to use some kind of strategy. And you've dropped that word strategy a few times. I think when you're new and fresh in the startup world and the nonprofit world, and you want to get things rolling, I think sometimes you forego the deliberate strategy, this deliberate planning session and laying out what it is that you want to do. Is this something you experience when you talk to brands?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, that they think a brand is a logo. So they get a logo done and say, okay, we got our branding done. You know, let's move on to more important things. And, you know, I recently did a workshop with a client that's kind of changing their business a little bit. And, you know, they pulled us in and said, we want to make sure that we're starting right. And so we did a, you know, 3-hour workshop and just got really deep into the nitty gritty and gave them the language, gave them the understanding of their brand. Just outlined it super clearly. So now everything moving forward launches from that place. And so even understanding with the brand and with the idea of the evolution and revolution and the mission creep and all that, you know, is also looking at the structure of a business. And there's terms that we use called, is it a branded house or a house of brands? Or is it kind of a combination of those? And so a branded house is when, you know, you've got one main brand and everything that brand produces has that brand on it.
What's an example?
Apple would, you know, everything coming out of Apple is I this, I that, you know, Mac this, Mac that. It's very consistent in what it does. Mm-hmm. It doesn't play around with sub brands, which is a house of brands. A house of brands is, like you had mentioned, Unilever has, you know, dozens of brands underneath it, and they all have their unique brand positioning. They have their own visuals. They have their own marketing campaigns. You know, Coca-Cola does this. You know, they have a whole bunch of Coca-Cola products that you don't even realize are actually Coca-Cola products, but they have their own branding. They have their own visuals. They have their own marketing campaigns.
So you can't see the video right now. I'm holding up Arwa, which is ARWA, it's water. I'm in the Middle East on the other side. It's in Arabic. This, the liter and a half of water is a Coca-Cola company. Has nothing to do with Coca-Cola, has nothing to do with their bottle packaging, branding, anything. It's blue, green, and white. Has nothing to do with Coca-Cola red. And here I am in the Middle East drinking this water, this Arwa, that is Coca-Cola company.
Right. And that's a perfect example of a house of brands is they have a bunch of brands underneath the main corporate identity that have their own standalone pieces. And that's where things like you mentioned the mission creep, if you're going to offer multiple things, decide from the get-go, are you going to separate those out as their own entities and brand those separately? Because if you don't, you'll start creating confusion.
We don't want confusion. Confused people don't buy. I heard that from someone very smart very recently. I don't know if you know him. His name is Paul Pavolny.
I don't know. That's not original with me, but I have no idea who said it first. You know, one of the things about being a creative is, you know, you're a sponge, you know, and I'm constantly absorbing stuff. And, you know, things pop in my head. I blurt it out. You know, sometimes it's original, sometimes it's a influenced by, and sometimes it's a straight up rip off. But honestly, I don't remember where stuff comes from. I don't document it all. But if you like it, you know, it's probably not from me. But it might be. I have no idea.
So where can our audience find you today? What is the best number one place to get a hold of you?
Well, depending on what they want to do, if they want to see the latest content, the latest ideas, the latest stuff that's going on, Facebook would be the place for that. It's what I keep most updated. It's where I spend most of my time and energy. But anywhere, you just look for VOPPA, VOPPA. You can go to my website, vopa.com, to contact me. You can connect on Twitter, on Instagram, on TikTok. I'm not very active on that, but it's Vopa once again on that. Snapchat, I'm all over the place as Vopa, but primarily my website would be the launch pad for pretty much everything I do.
Well, hey, Paul, thanks so much for being on the show today, for giving us a little clarity and a little framework to do a self-evaluation, an honest self-evaluation to see if we're on the right trail or if we're just all over the place and suffering from mission creep or irrelevancy. Thank you so much, Paul.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Hop over to patreon.com/nonprofitarchitect. Throw me $5 a month and see my exclusive behind the scenes content of my pre-interviews and what I do with all my guests before they actually become guests on the show.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.